Are we going?
Into podcast.
Potter Who Cast.
But how's it called? Billis Major at your service.
Don't forget me.
Sarah, did you forget me?
Oh, let's go! That's class!
There is no such thing as...
I was thinking this today.
Tom or... I was about to say John Pertwee, but he's already...
But his legacy lives on. That clip in the War Games in Color where it's like, it is actual John Pertwee, but the way they've like thrown like 15 filters onto it, looks like CG. It's like, that John Pertwee's going to die, I think. The real John Pertwee's going to be really fine.
Can I say something about that? I just love that in the year of our Lord 2024, you know, everyone's worried about AI and resurrecting dead actors, and I love that Doctor Who is keeping a tradition alive of just using a promotional PNG from the archives, and it's like, yep, there it is. No edits, no attempt was even made to make it look three-dimensional. It is the most 11th Doctor promotional image, transparent PNG. I love that.
It's, God bless him. Reminds me of Potter Request, by the way. It reminds me of the bit where in Let's Kill Hitler when the Doctor is dying, he's like, show me, you know, someone, whatever. And then it's just like really obvious PNGs of Billy Piper, Freeman Adjuman.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. He's like, Jesus Christ. Like, could you not got something like done rather than doing that?
You're telling me you couldn't have gone to the set of,
what were they doing?
Hold on. I know this. It's the one where you couldn't have gone to the set of Secret Diary of a Call Girl and shot some footage?
Well, yeah.
What the hell is Secret Diary of a Call Girl?
That was her big, Matt Smith's in that as well for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know. A good man goes to war, I guess. I'm in a bit of a funk mood. The day David Lynch died, that's one thing. And also, just, I think I have a head cold. But
also, LA is still on fire as we speak, so... Yeah. In a way, it feels the perfect moment to talk about this episode because this episode 2 is on fire. I couldn't think of a connection. Sorry.
Alicia Keys, more like this good man is on fire.
Lorna Bucket.
Yeah. Oh, Lorna Bucket. We'll get to Lorna Bucket.
That was, oh my God, that's it's a Lieutenant Singh from Strange New Worlds. When I saw her, I went, holy shit. Doctor Who truly just completely sticks its little fingers into everything. Although in this case, it's more that she went on to do something else.
Mm-hmm. In this case, it's more like she has a weird purpose. But anyway, who else is going to war besides me?
Hi, my name is Michelle. I'm not going to war. I don't like war.
Mm-hmm. What is it good for?
What is it good for? And who else is going to war with us?
Oh, yeah, we're the fat, thin, Anglican Marines.
Wow. It is, oh, I love, it's such a, this is 2011 example of writing. And I'm like, God bless you, Moffat. Yep, you're an ally.
Yeah, and I also love the two explicit fat jokes where the joke is just the word fat, the fat one, and then Dorian has a fat joke as well. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, there's no nuance.
Dorian, well, I'm getting ahead of myself, but I think I love Dorian. I think there's like...
So Is it just me, or is the paint fading from his chin?
Oh, the paint is gone.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. So I was like, is this a situation where this footage was not meant to be seen in such high definition? But this was shot in 2012, yeah. And I was like, that paint is fading from his hands and his chin, like visibly so.
We'll get to it. June 4th, may the June 4th be with you. 2011. Directed by Peter Hoare. And Peter Hoare directed episodes of the Netflix MCU shows, like The Vendors, which I think is very interesting, considering what this is kind of foreshadowing as like a cultural movement. He directed It's a Sin, and then he directed two episodes of The Last of Us. The first one is the Murray Bartlett... Nick Offerman and Murray Bartlett episode in series one, the third episode, which I think he wins something for. I don't know if it's like an Emmy he wins for that. And then he directed the series two episode, and that's obviously not that yet. But, he's going back to series 15. He's doing two episodes of series 15.
He's doing two.
Oh. One of them is, I think, the first episode, and then the other one, I think, is like the third or fourth. I don't know.
Yeah, there's some really good shots in this. It almost makes you forget they're spending the entire episode standing around in a big empty warehouse.
Yeah,
they almost forget cold, that. Like... it must have been so cold.
Well, in a sentence, the Doctor and Rory assemble a ragtag group of people, but not River Song, to go and take on the church, the papal mainframe. Who have kidnapped Amy and stolen her baby, and it turns out once they fail to save the baby, that the baby's actually River. Which is why she couldn't be involved, and the doctor goes like, oh, okay. And then he runs off to find her. Because the only water in the forest is this little Lorna bucket.
Realized, shouldn't her name be Song River? I mean, in that case, it would be so obvious because people would be like, Song River, Melody Pond. It is, I cannot believe, oh my god, it is so on the nose. I cannot believe at no point... At a point in my life, I was like, whoa, this came out of nowhere.
Right,
what are we talking about? It is the most, like, when the instance she was like, the only water in the river is in the forest is the river, I went, oh, Melody Pond, Song River. You got me again, Moffat.
Even in this episode, like, River comes back from seeing the doctor and she's like, oh, it's my birthday today. I'm like, oh my gosh, okay. We get it, girl. Happy birthday.
You just saw it. You just saw my birthday.
Yeah.
I think this reveal is great. I love it. I loved it this time. This entire episode, I think I figured out why at a certain point. This entire episode was me being like, wait, I hated this? Because I remember not liking this episode when I watched it the first time, and the whole time I was like, whoa, this is great. And then there's a specific moment towards the end that I go like, okay, you lost me. But this reveal, I was like, yeah, it still hits. It's a great reveal. And it just makes you go like, oh, everything makes sense. But also it opens up enough questions that you're like, I want to see a little bit more of this, which Let's Kill Hitler does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and especially the score when the like reveal is happening. I think the music is so good.
Mm-hmm. It's just, it feels like a real victory lap, which makes the like second half where, you know, everything comes falling apart so much more effective.
Yeah.
One of the most harrowing things, I think, is when like it seems like everything's going to plan and then the doctor realizes, the baby isn't real, and then the baby like explodes, and it's just like
in goo. Yes,
yeah, and yes. Amy just like screeches. It's so like, it's so like well put together, I think, and like the fact that it's so well put together with characters you've never met before,
right?
And,
yes,
and yet it feels like, oh my god, it's, you know, it's, which I suppose part of that is like hindsight, like, oh well, we know these people now, but like. It's like, here are three original characters that you've never met. You're gonna like root for them a bit by the end of this, and it's just such a great kind of thing.
With Lorna Bucket.
But Lorna's off bucketing by herself. the thing as well is that it confirms that he just hates Jack's vibes. He didn't bother going to find Jack to be like, could you help out here? Although I know,
Barrowman did something right stopping that happening.
Wasn't Barrowman supposed to be?
He was, but we'll get to the reason why he couldn't be here for the next 10 weeks or thereabouts at some point. Because he was off in LA with half the cast of American Prestige Television. Yeah, and I don't know.
Of course, Ud Sigma was supposed to be there too.
I mean, Ud Sigma, that guy's he's too high.
Ud Sigma was supposed to like sing or something, I'm pretty sure.
Oh my god, he's always singing. It's like, girl, give it up. You're not on The Voice, the mad singer. Can you imagine? Just Jack underneath that mask.
They pull off the hood. It's me. No. Do you believe in
Knowing the Masked Singer, everyone would be like, oh my god, it's like, you know, is that Cher? Is that like, because they're always like, is that Cher? I think it's Ariana Grande, and then it's like fucking like Russell Kemp or something. It's always like some random like
David, I think you've just done some kind of like Ghostbuster situation where you have chosen the form of our defeater because of our killer, because I've just had the vision of a giant Ood mask in the Masked Singer, or just an Ood in the Masked Singer, and they're like, "Who's that mask?" I feel like that's something that's gonna happen in the next 2 years.
Because genuinely, I remember it was like, it was, I think it was like maybe last summer or the summer before. I mean, Rita Ora, someone who like I completely do not, like, my mind cannot comprehend Rita Ora. I don't know what it is. It's just like, as like a cultural entity and as a person, I'm always just like, you confuse me too much, because, you know, she's like doing like M&S collabs, and then she's like a co-host in the NBC New Year's Eve coverage, and then she's like playing Ditto on Pokemon stuff. So, I remember she was one of the panelists, and it was like, I can't remember who it ended up being, but she was like, I think it might be Taylor Swift, you know, under the mask. I was like, what in what fucking world is Taylor Swift on a TV mask singer?
In the UK as well.
Maybe he was right to kill her in the Pokemon movie.
Who are we talking about? Who is this person? I have no idea who this is. I'm watching the Traitors now, and there's so many celebrities where they're like, I'm watching both the American and the British versions, and the American version, it's all reality show celebrities. So it's a lot of like, oh my, literally there was an episode where they were like, oh my God, Boston Rob. And everyone's like, Boston Rob. And I was like, who the fuck is Boston Rob? And I'm having Boston the Rob. Exact same feeling right now where you guys are like, Rita Ora. I'm like, who is this?
Who's this? I think that's the first time those two names have been in the same sentence.
Yeah, Boston Rob and Rita Ora. Traitors All Stars.
Rita Ora, famously, there was a famous rumor throuple involving her and Taika Waititi.
Oh, yeah.
That one I do know who is. Now, here's my question. Have they done any, like, Doctor Who theme masks at the Masked Singer UK? No.
Is the Masked Singer UK not, like, toad in the hole and, like,
it's
a carrot?
It's like,
well, let me see. It's Viking, Bush Baby, Grandfather Clock, Seahorse.
What was...
Cause bagpipes. There's a bagpipe.
The recent one was, what you call it? Macy Gray was, like, a
pawn. Yeah, I think she was toad in the hole. Off.
This is getting well beyond the point, but who won the last series of Masked Singer UK? Let's see.
I will find out right now. The person who won Masked Singer UK series 5 was Danny Houston Jones. I always say Houston.
Oh.
It would be, imagine if at the Masked Singer, they're like, who's that bad man? They pull out the mask and it's Danny Houston smiling. Just
do you know who? Do you know who's been on the Masked Singer, like, a limited so far this year? Prue Leith was on the Masked Singer.
Prue Leith?
Yeah.
Did she carry a mask on her head? I'm thinking of the older one from the first series of
Mary Barry.
I was imagining her, and I was like, I don't think she's gonna like be able to hold that mask.
Do you want to see what Prue, they have Prue Leith, who is like Colin Baker, deceptively old. Like, Prue Leith's like, I'm pretty sure Prue Leith is like way older than she looks. She's 81.
Oh.
Oh my god.
This is what they had Prue Leaf, where 81-year-old Prue Leaf had to sing wearing this.
Oh my god. It's a Pegasus head with wings. Oh my god.
My breastplate area is like, that looks heavy. Like, that's genial.
Oh my god. I love that. Oh.
Anyway.
You know Russell T. Davis right now is making up an episode where Shuchi's going to be like, no, Mo Gilligan, that's not a mass singer, that's a Dalek.
But speaking of...
Right now.
Yeah. I don't know.
Speaking of Russell T. Davis writing, A Good Man Goes to War features none. But it does feature... It does feature the first appearance of the Paternoster Gang, which is the most 2012 thing in this entire episode.
Yeah.
Lesbians with Swords is such... I'm going to get... This is a little bit of a different thing that happened recently, but we were talking about in the Doctor's Wife episode about how the Doctor's Wife is a poison pill for nostalgia storytelling, where it's all just references. I think this episode is a little bit of a poison pill like that too, but it's also very much like, there's so much in this episode that's like, oh, that's where we were at that time. You know, Vastra and Jenny being these lesbians who constantly refer to the fact they're lesbians, but also never touch, or the fact that they're sword lesbians. Or the little joke that Rory has where it's like, I thought it was going to be cool. And it's like, you are cool. Because man crying is cool. Like, it's okay for men to cry, but they got to point out that they're crying. There's so much in this that it's like, oh, this is where we were kind of heading and this is where we are at the moment. And I don't know if that's keeping me from enjoying the episode so much so as it's like, I'm looking at it, it's like, oh... There's so much yet to come in terms of the types of stories we can tell with these characters. And this is like the highlight of this era, personally. Did any of that make sense? I hope it did make sense.
Yeah.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely feel like it feels like it thinks it looks more epic than it actually does. I think we were watching the big screen, and I kind of did it a disservice because it really does show, like, because in my head it's so epic, but you're right, like the majority of it is like a static like shipping container esque room.
Yeah, but what I do really like about the episode is, like, I feel like it does that Moffat thing, which I don't think any other showrunner does, where they are going to multiple locations in one episode. Like, he's going to collect, like, Vastra and Jenny in, like, Victorian England or whatever, and then he, like, they flash to wherever, like, all the other characters are, and I feel like that, like, globe-trotting element of it is so Moffat that I love that. Yeah, I feel like it makes the world feel really big.
It makes it, like, a universe.
Yeah. And having, and everything is so good, too.
Yeah.
He literally just did it with Joys of the World. It's how Joys of the World opens.
I loved in that episode, too.
Not as effective as here, I don't think.
Yeah, but I do like the location setting. I do think he does that really well, because it's like, oh, well, the Doctor has a TARDIS. Let's just zip a boy.
Yeah.
We can go to planet. I feel like sometimes, like... Well, in other seasons, like season one of the new show.
As we know, Russell does not like the TARDIS interior.
Yeah, we don't really get to go places. We kind of like stay where we are. And I feel like Jodie's era is like that, where I do love in like Matt's episodes, he gets to travel so much. In this episode, he does that a lot.
But it is actually crazy in this episode, they're not in the TARDIS at all.
Right, you don't need to be inside.
Yeah.
And they do have that great shot that they make when he goes to recruit Dorian. And it's just these... You don't even see the TARDIS. It's just a silhouette of Matt Smith on the wall with a big light. It's like, that's all you need.
I think, like, showing you the Doctor is really, like, effective, because then when he does be there, you're like, yay!
Yeah, the first 20 minutes of this is like, what if we were to present the other side of, like, what if you were watching the finale of a Doctor Who season from the perspective of the bad guys, where they're just kind of waiting for the Doctor to pull off his plan? And I think that's the part where the episode succeeds the most. There's this one shot where Matt Smith, he plays the whole thing very, very comically and jovially, like, oh, this isn't as fun. And then there's this specific moment where he's talking to Colonel Runaway. And he almost gets a little bit mad and he catches himself. And then Madame Kavarian, she says, like, good men have too many rules. And there's a shot where it's like a close up of Matt Smith's face and it's in darkness and he slowly turns and he looks straight up like a maniac. He looks like, oh, he is 5 seconds away from completely breaking right now. And it is really, really good because this is a doctor where they always hint that he's close to breaking, but they never really show it. And I think the hints are the best part of the of this arc for him.
Yeah, definitely, because series five is so like silly, goofy, like Eleven's like a child. And then I feel like this is like at least showing that he can have that kind of like McCoy-esque like other side where you're like, don't piss me off.
Yeah, and I think that's so important too, because like the crux of season five and six for me is that there are so many groups of people that are afraid of the doctor. Like that's like we really need to see like why they try to put him in the Pandorica, why there's an entire like religion set out to try and stop the doctor. Like I feel like we need to see those glimmers of darkness, and I feel like like that exact shot you're saying really resonates with that. I think I do like that more complex side of the doctor, and this episode I think is where it comes to a head with Eleven.
Yeah.
So here's what I want to say about that. I totally agree with you. I love the hints that they show here. I think the moment when Kavarian is doing that whole speech where she's like, we need Melody as a weapon against you, and then Vastra is also being like, oh, you are getting to me. No, it's River at the end who's like, you're to me. Like they build an army against you, all that stuff. I don't buy that for Matt Smith's doctor, because if they were doing that to the Seventh Doctor, if they were doing that to, you know, Colin Baker, if they were doing that to McCoy, if they were doing that to Capaldi, I would buy that speech.
Right.
But someone being like, you got too mean to Matt Smith, it feels to me like the Moffat problem of he loves to reference these things that happened in the past. And he just comes into thinking, and now he was, because I referenced these things, you immediately go, oh, that means that the doctor has gone through this arc and I could just do all the stuff right now of like having people call him out on it. But he hasn't actually gone through any of it.
Yeah.
This doctor in particular has not done anything as close as to what Ten did to the Family of Blood. And that was on the last series of the guy. So for River to be like, you are getting too mean or too warrior-like, I don't buy that. That's where the episode loses steam for me.
Yeah, well, I do agree with that. Yeah, I think it's like a lot of telling and not an awful lot of showing. And I think maybe it goes a little bit too quickly from the two-parter before this straight into here without giving us the chance to have the doctor like ruminate on it and sit on it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My thing as well is that like next season they kind of try and course correct by him being like, I'm going to delete myself from like every single database in the world and just like, you know, try and be like a ghost again, but it doesn't ever feel like they get away from that idea of like, you know, he is the oncoming storm. Like by name the doctor at that point is them just being like, yeah, why not, whatever, you know, he's just the biggest person in the world again. I don't know, I feel like it makes sense for this doctor to be that figure, but only in the way that, like, it's the incumbent incarnation. Like, I don't think it's like, you know, Matt Smith hasn't done this or that. It's like, you know, this is a doctor who, like, at this point, believes, and the world believes, killed all of his race to end the war.
There is that side of the thing where it's like this is the character we've been following for the past 50-ish years. But at the same time, this is a Moffat thing, specifically. The Doctor being the most important person in the universe and also the most feared person in the universe is a Moffat thing. It is a thing he loves to do, and he loves to... It was a thing all the way back from, like, the first Series 1 episode he did, where, like, they reference the weapon factories of Villengard. I was there once. The doctor in Moffat's world is always the most important person, which makes sense. That is his thing. So it does make sense in universe for this character to be told this. But at the same time, as an audience member, I can see that it's like it's show, don't tell. It's tell, don't show, you know? They're telling me that these things are real, and I'm like, yeah, I can see that. But I accept him to be real because not because you've convinced me through story, but because of, like, the meta-narrative of this world.
And yeah, I don't know if they want to hinge it on the fact that we, like, they want us to be shocked that the like, childish doctor has changed so much that, like, they're just expecting us to fill in the gaps with our own lore knowledge.
That's literally it. It's just that they expect you to fill in the gap, and there's this idea that because you are filling in the gap, you are knowledgeable about the meta narrative. And again, this was the audience at the time. The audience at the time were people who knew all the meta narratives, and they knew all the stuff, and they knew all the hints. And this was catnip for them. It's just that, like, in retrospect, going back, I'm like, now every single story is like this. Every single story is now the whole, they don't show you the stories. They just keep making references to them. And you never actually get engaged. You're just expected to have these built-in relationships with these characters because you know them from outside the story. So it's a little bit of, like, it's not so much that this episode is culpable of that. It's just, like, this episode was the precursor, was, like, the warning flag of what was to come, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like that's, like, almost strange because when they do introduce the new characters in this episode, I think they do a great job of showing you, like, their role in it in terms of, like, like, there's a lot of implied history with, like, Vastra with the Doctor that we obviously don't see, but I do believe it because they've, like, built in a bit of dialogue to make us understand that relationship. So, like, I think he's successful at doing it with, like, the tertiary characters more, maybe.
Yeah, I think they also are building off the fact that then, like, she, well, I can't remember her name. Is it Niamh? McIntosh, who is playing the same species that she played last season, but just not the same characters. So then it kind of implies history for us.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, she's from the same batch as this other one.
And Dan Stark.
There's also Strax.
Yeah.
I was about to say, it helps that all of these characters that he introduces are either you know them and you just need to see one shot of them, like the pirates, or you need to Google them on the TARDIS Wiki, like Denny Boy.
Denny Boy, the doctor, Denny Boy, the doctor.
Then you have and it's like, I am not a fan of the Paternoster gang, but I understand why they came back because they're immediately iconic in the sense of, like, yeah, he's the nice Santaran. Here's the nice Silurian. There are all these ideas that to this point in the show, you haven't seen them. And so when they appear, you immediately go, yeah, I get who these guys are, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I think is crazy is then that, again, I'm on the episode, so I'm going to shit on Big Finish, but why have Big Finish not, you know, done origin stories for them, but then they've got them meeting, like, the second Doctor and Jackie and all this shite? Like,
it's, I think what doesn't help, I'm not sure if, like, how you feel with this, that I've always felt like the three of them never really sound that engaged when they do those box sets either.
Like, yeah, because I think didn't she step away from doing them for a while as well, and then he replaced her with another voice.
Like in Redacted, like, it's I can't remember her name, but she takes over for Redacted and then does, like, some other stuff, and then it's like I don't know, they never. What it feels like to me is that, like, there was some unspoken rule that, like, if these guys, because, like, Strax straight up dies, and then it turns out, they recommend, like, not dying, but, like, it feels like there was some unwritten rule that where they were like, these guys are unpopular, we're gonna, like, you know, gear up for, you know, their own show, you know, whatever. Yeah. And then something somewhere down the line, whether it was, like, the budget being cut between seasons, or, like, Moffat himself being like, I'm working on Sherlock and the show right now, and I can't do both, so I can't do three shows. But, like, it feels like by the time Big Finish gets to them, it's obviously in the, like, you know, it's in the Crotons meet Santa Claus meets.
It's always Jackie, to be honest.
It is. They must have like a five box set deal with her at this point. Where, like, she's like,
no, I'm telling. I'm telling you, you know how people do, like, when you hire an actor, you just do, like, a normal background check? The person who does that is Nick Briggs, and he has dirt on everyone. Mm-hmm. He just keeps the... I think the reason the Paternoster Gang, their box sets are not the hit, even though there was the desire to see them come back, it's because the situation... I just don't think that them as Sherlock Holmes ex-spies is interesting. Like... they're introduced as, oh, they're in Victorian England during these cases. And it's like, okay. And then what? Like, so they're just going to be solving cases in Victorian England? That to me is like so limiting. And also, it's just not that interesting. That's like one episode of Doctor Who.
But I don't know, because I do feel like the, especially the Jago and Lightfoot stuff doesn't feel like that. Maybe because they are humans in a human era. But I don't know why Big Finish didn't do a more passover between Jago and Lightfoot and Paternoster Gang. I think there was like one crossover where one of them was in it. But it's like, if that already worked and people were already buying that, then why did they not connect them? I know that like the New Who like stuff came much later, but surely that could be a good passing of the torch, especially because Jago and Lightfoot both are now dead as of last week.
Yeah. Unfortunate timing.
I know, another death. Like,
it's, oh, I don't know. It just feels like, and we say this every single day, it feels like there's something rotten in the state of Denmark. You know, there's something wrong behind the scenes that is going wrong, because like none of their creative decisions seem to be making sense as of late.
Like even the smart ones
are like, why is this happening? Like they're relying on banked material. Like they had like the Jodie box that I think makes sense, and I said this before, partly because Colin Baker sounds old, Tom Baker, you're using material recorded when he was like 5 years younger, McGann's always going to be there, but like McCoy, you know, it's getting hard to record McCoy as well. It makes sense for them to be like, we've lost Eccleston, we've lost Tennant, we need like a younger doctor who we can build things around, and she and Mandip Giller are like willing to do this. But like the fact that they held,
what do you mean
off,
they lost Eccleston?
Eccleston's not doing them anymore. He said like he essentially, it is essentially,
he must have gotten that pool. Yeah,
he did.
Yeah, I think he said he liked it. Like he said he enjoyed it, but he was like, I've done it now, bye.
Yeah,
I did my contract. Yeah.
I would rather not have to sit next to Nick Briggs for 5 hours.
Yeah. Do you think every time he came into the booth, he was like, they're almost done with the pool, guys. They're almost done.
I'm getting a nice little ladder to go in.
They're filling it in water. Get it in before the pool's done.
But like the fact that they held off a year, I know the BBC said, like, can you hold off a year? They held off a year on the Coda, which like,
I was going to say Coda. Yeah.
Yeah, it has nothing, like, there's nothing in Coda that required them to hold off for a year. There's no like.
I think it's so stupid. It killed the hype. Like yeah. You've killed it dead now, literally.
Mm-hmm.
The moment the BBC was like, "Can you delay it for a year?" If that was a Big Finish, I would have been like, "Why? Why? Mm-hmm. Why would we delay the finale of our 60th anniversary thing for a year, though?"
It's not even
if you didn't care, that's about like her. Like you're just killing the trajectory of the plot of all these box sets that no one bought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just like it's just so stupid, and like they keep doing
like they're uploading all the Classic Who stories to YouTube for free out of nowhere. There's just no, which again, it sounds like we're mad, but this is an amazing thing and they should do more of it. But also why did they wake up one day and we're like, you know what we should do? Make classic Doctor Who easily available for people. After 20 years of being told to do that, like, why?
The other thing is, as well as like, this is just going to turn into like grievances, but I have a point to this. I'm going to tie this back in. There is a weird thing where like series, like 60th filming, series one filming, they're like, okay, we know, like we're filming in public. You guys can come along and like, you know, take photos, you know, do whatever. And then literally overnight they were like, no more, please, everyone, like if you have a camera, we will take the camera and put you in jail. Not literally, but like, you know, they were like, no more set photographs, no more nothing, which I think is partly because and I don't want to be rude. I'll be rude about Doctor Who fans. There are a lot of people doing that who crossed a lot of lines. Particularly the guy who took photographs of the monitor as they were filming was like, look at this thing they're filming right now. Like that. And there are a couple of people who are like parasocial to a extreme degree.
Yeah.
But like, it does feel, it feels like there's no real kind of, not leadership.
Overall plan.
Yeah. Cause like, you know, you have Warp Between Land and Sea, which was filming and then apparently was dropped. And then like, no, actually we haven't wrapped at all. And then, you know, there's no clear actual date for when that's coming out. There's like no idea of when this is happening, that's happening. But what I'm going to tie it into is that like this, and this is getting ahead of myself as well. This episode ends after the credits with, and I'm not sure it's still on there. Like, you know, obviously like Cut the Black, whatever, opens up on this kind of weird battlefield. It's very green. The camera's panning down and it pans down to a sonic screwdriver in a skeleton hand. And it says, time runs out.
I'll and never forget that.
That never like equates to anything. There's no reason to that. There's never any kind of follow up to that. And it's like, oh, I don't know. Cause what I'm saying is I think there is a lot of what we have today in this episode, partly one, the way, because this is a two-parter, and this is like the first part of a two-parter, but it's like a very kind of oblique kind of two-parter. It feels like that kind of modern Russell two-parter, where like the first part, and we've only really had one, so I can point that one. The first part's good on like first viewing, and then you come back and you're like, I can kind of see, you know, I can see how the magic trick was done, and it doesn't really hit the same way. And obviously I need to rewatch. I haven't watched Empire Death again, so I can't like think, but I'm not sure if they both share the same kind of bizarre resolution. But like,
why would you? It was the wrong acronym.
God, don't. But like the whole like everything from here, like, you know, obviously Villengard isn't in this, but like Villengard is a Moffat thing that comes back. The church, I want to talk about the church as well, because the church is such an interesting idea for, like, you know, we need an army, how about the church? That the church comes back in series one is one of those Moffat things I like, because it is like what you were saying before, but like, you know, it makes it feel like there's a world and like a universe, because, you know, this is like a really deep pull, but like it's a deep pull that wouldn't make sense, you know? Like Dorium, I think Dorium in this makes perfect sense, because like it's like, you know, bringing back like a minor character to play that kind of role again. Obviously, this time he doesn't. My favorite things in Pandora Opens is when River poisons his drink, and he gives it the really, really camp look of like he cocks one eyebrow and goes like starts pouting at River as well. Obviously, he would trade that in for him smearing his paint all over himself, but somehow. But like, it feels like the kind of prototype that goes wrong for future generations. And I think there's maybe the chimney in there as well. But like, I don't know. This feels like, I don't want to say this is where it peaks, because I think there's, you know, there's brighter days ahead. It's maybe where it peaks for the 11th Doctor year, I think, because afterwards you have series 6 part 2. I think is very much a kind of an up and down ride. And then series 7 obviously lucky to have series 7 at all in any form.
Yeah.
To be honest. I don't know. It's like the Prue-leaf Pegasus of television, you know, it's somehow still standing, even though it's kind of bogged down by a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the fact that they want to pay off or like bring up the Strax not actually being dead, but they wait like nearly 2 years to release that like mini episode. It's like, yeah. Well, who cares about the coda or the mid-season finale of season 6 on the premiere of season 7? Like, it just feels messy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like you said, the fact we got series 7 at all is amazing and a feat of television producing, But also, this is like the moment when the Moffat's tendency to make everything at the Doctor's darkest hour starts it becoming like when Rory was like, we need you to go to Demon's Run, and River was like, this is the Doctor's darkest hour. I was like, every hour is the Doctor's darkest hour. The Big Bang was the Doctor's darkest hour. The weddings of River Song is going to be the Doctor's darkest hour. Trenzalore is the Doctor's darkest hour. Why? I just want one of these days, if Moffat ever does another finale, can he just go and clean up an aisle at a Walmart or something? Like, can it just be the stakes can be big. It doesn't have to be, because this Doctor always has a darkest hour around the corner. Always. It just gets to a point where it can be a little bit too much.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I love how Madame Vassar was like, you have never risen higher. Like, she might as well have said, you are at a high point in your character arc, my friend.
Yeah.
Nothing can possibly go wrong.
No, she's like, the cliffhanger's coming up in 10 minutes.
That's mistakes again. Yeah, I think that's what I was saying to people when we watched it this time around. Because the first time I watched it, like, I thought it was incredible. And I do still think it's a good episode. But the writing feels so plot-driven in, like, nearly every scene. Where it feels like people are just like, I think it's when River's doing the voiceover, which, like, production wise is really cool when Eleven's running and he's trying to get to Amy, but then she's just like plot dumping like this poem. Like,
the
baby died and it wasn't real, and then, like, I'm like, oh my god, we can see on the screen.
Yeah.
It's fantastical, and it feels like, I love River. She's my favorite character in Doctor Who. I think she's incredible. But sometimes it's almost like she is the narrator of the show. It feels a bit organic. Yeah. And like definitely, like you say, the stakes were just rising and rising, where Vash was like, what's the highest highs and then the lowest ever lows? And I'm like, the low was actually not even that low. He was kind of sad for 5 minutes. And then he just bops into the TARDIS and then leaves. He's actually really not that sad. So I do think sometimes there's, like, problems with stakes, and I find it in this episode too. I know we haven't talked about the headless monks yet, but, like, there's, like, 100 headless monks with their, like, lightsabers, and then the Doctor just closes his eyes, opens his eyes again, and they're all dead, and Vastra and Jenny are just standing there, like...
Yeah.
Laura Bucket died for that.
Well, she did die. She didn't make it, but, you know, I find sometimes, like, yeah, they want to make things seem so high stakes, but then it's resolved so easily that it feels like, oh, we maybe over-dramatize out of it.
Mm-hmm. The thing about Lorna is, like,
Lorna box set when?
Exactly. Like, I love the idea of, like, this character who only has, like a certain kind of view of this character. Like, she hasn't, like, we haven't seen him before, but she's met him, and he inspired her people, but in a way that, like, you wouldn't expect. Like, he inspired the word warrior, and, like, you know, obviously there is that famous thing where, like, the whole, you know, we get the word doctor from you is, like, based on Moffat, like, forum posting, like, 30, 40 years ago now, being like, what if we got the word doctor from the doctor? Which is, like, I really, like, If you're going to be, like, a poster and you get a job like that, I really, really, really recommend people just do that, because it's fun. It's fun to, like, canonize this thing that I thought of on, like, message boards. that's why Lorna Bucket box set is going to happen once Nick sells the company to us. but, like, it's such an interesting idea. But I kind of end up wishing we had more of Lorna book. Like, there's, like, not enough, I think, of Lorna in that kind of sense. Like, I love the little moment they have, though, when he's like, oh, we were running in the forest, and then she just kind of dies, and he's, because it merely, the camera's home, like, oh, he's kind of, like, it's that whole thing of, like, Davros saying, like, you make soldiers out of the people that, like, are closest to you, and they fight your battles for you, and they die for you, because it's what you do. But, like, I kind of just wish we had, like, maybe one or two more, like, Lorna Bucket moments. Lorna Bucket moment, you know?
Yeah, you almost want this to be a two-parter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if the Lorna Bucket thing is because it is just so rare that Moffat actually kills anyone at all.
Mm-hmm.
for sure. So then you maybe are like, you want more because you're used to just being like, oh, and then she got resurrected with Strax and then she joined the Paternoster gang. Sorry, if they could resurrect Strax using whatever doodah they say in that mini episode, they just left Lorna's corpse there.
Well, I love the bit that he's like, he tells her that I remember you, and then right after she dies, the first thing he says is, who was she?
I love that. I do love that.
Yeah, I think that's cool.
I think that's really showing the point that David was making around they're kind of inconsequential. Like, he makes such a big impact, but then he doesn't even fully remember them all the time because he just tells everybody to run. So that'll apply. And I think that's one of the rare instances where it does show that he has a darker side, or
show don't tell.
He's easier to he just lies so easily, even if it is for comfort. I do like that. But then immediately once River's revealed, he's bobbing around again.
He's I can fix this. Yeah. Solutionizing.
Screw Lorna.
Sort of the point. I feel every time I noticed some of what you were saying too. And I almost wrote it down, but as I was writing it down, I was like, isn't that the point of the story, that Amy has just gone through this traumatic, awful event, and the doctor's reaction is to immediately hop on a TARDIS, and I have found a solution to, this problem, and I'm going to go fix it. And it's like, whoa, that doesn't change the fact that she is traumatized. Mm-hmm. Literally, when she goes to hug her, she backs up, and Jenny has to be like, it's not his fault. And he's like, no, I know. But, she's very much, going through something. And I can see Moffat making that point, but also, it's so in the background that I can see it being a mistake.
Yeah. Right. When she grabs the gun and everything and goes towards River, she is really angry, and I think we need more of that. Yeah. And I think to bring all of that to the forefront 3 minutes before the end of the episode and then put us on a hiatus and then not address that again. I feel I would have liked some more of Amy and the doctor going at it over this, because as you say, it was extremely traumatic for her. She's lost her baby multiple times. She wasn't actually a real person for a long time. She was goo. You know how many trauma things can happen to her, which is why I love skipping ahead. Clara and 12's relationship is a lot more of accountability, that deeper conversation. So I wish we had got that from Amy here, because I don't think she gets to have the breadth of she feels very childish in comparison to a lot of other companions to me.
I think the issue is then 11 just thinks that he is a good man, whereas 12 doesn't know if he is, so he's more willing to have those conversations.
Sure.
Right. And also I think that speaking about Amy, the opening does such a good job of making you think, oh, she's talking about the doctor, she's talking about Rory, which she does in every episode.
Right, yeah.
But then immediately, the first scene after, it's those two guys being like, so the doctor. Which is it kind of felt like you guys were building up to, oh, the actual good man of the title is Rory. Which again, and it goes back to, I think this is the point, but I don't think they make enough of an actual highlight of this point for me to give them the credit for it. You know, and Amy sort of doesn't get to do anything in this episode at all. I mean, Karen Gillan, the actress, gets to show a lot of range. But considering what Amy is going through, and considering the fact that we later found out that she is now infertile because of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's just so little time and breath to give into Amy as a character to process and to see, to even just show her viewpoint of these things that are going through, that I think it's honestly a disservice to her in the long run.
Yeah, I think they thought if they just get her to pull a gun twice, that the people watching will be like, oh, she's mad because she pulled a gun on the other two female characters in the episode.
Right. Yeah, but not at the doctor, and I feel like that's what I want to see. I would have loved, I wish we could have had time to linger on that a bit more before River, the doors are locked, everything's locked down, and then River just teleports in with her, temporal
vortex.
Yeah.
How is she getting everyone home, by the way, with, we only take one person? Yeah.
that's the thing, again, that's another point where I'm like, the reason why is because the doctor doesn't want to look at Amy because he's just, he's the reason why, she went for all this, he doesn't look at her, he goes on the tire, he hops away. Oh, that's the point they're trying to make. But at the same time, why didn't they make that point? It's like, Moffat, you are a good writer. You could have, with a couple of lines, highlighted that. But the fact that she didn't makes me feel like, yeah, it's like, oh, and we're just going to move on.
Yeah, because I feel like the dialogue can be so heavy-handed in this episode multiple times. So that's why I don't really believe that is the intended subtext, even though it's mm-hmm. so good to think of it that yeah, way. Like, yeah. It's such a good point, and it makes a lot of sense. But yeah, I don't think he's trying to make it.
So much of being a Doctor Who fan is creating your own subtext that didn't actually exist.
Yes, especially with Classic Who. Yes, we are doing that over a guy who did that. Like, this episode is him doing what we're talking about. Like, him be like, okay, I've seen all these things in Classic Who, and I can sort of, if all of the previous 50 years of history are true, then there must be someone who's like, let's get this guy. Like, let's fucking get this guy. Although the reason he comes up with why they are like, let's fucking get this, the most goodest person in the universe, let's kill them. The reason why he comes up with why they're doing that is, I will say, not good. It's it is not a good reason, and it takes two more seasons before we ever get a full picture as to why this entire thing is happening in the first place. Random note I just want to comment. I really like the detail that Strax has big natties.
Oh, yeah.
He literally says it. I have big naturals. And he points at his chest.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a moment here where they bring out the cot, and Amy is like, do you have children? Did you used to have children? And this is a topic that's recently come back up because they sort of retconned the Doctor having kids mm-hmm. in the most recent series. And I'm like, no, the Doctor should have kids. And in fact, I think they should just bring out a Doctor's kids. There should just be a character who shows up like, hi, I am your son. Oh, yeah, this is my son from like a couple years back. Because like
I like when it's implied more than actually said. Like,
right.
Like the multiple times they bring it up, like they bring out and fear her as well. It's just like mentioned, but then moved along. I like that as a mystery, but also I don't want it to be a hard no.
Yeah. Mm,
yeah.
Yeah, I feel like Russell maybe did go a bit more down the hard line. I like Eleven's reaction here, where he doesn't really answer her. You know, it's not as like mm-hmm. as firm. He is like clearly avoidant about the topic, and, yeah. mm-hmm. and I actually really love that. Like, I just think that moment is really nice for Karen in the episode, where I don't think she gets to do that much. I feel like her trying to bond with the Doctor is really nice, but I also am like, is this not after your baby was just exploded? So then why is she being so considerate and so kind?
Yeah.
But I still think that the conversation with the Doctor's like lineage is interesting, and I do like that Moffat included it.
Yeah.
Because obviously mm-hmm. like the Doctor will be thinking about Susan and also his like family whenever like he's pulling out this call.
But like, what I always think is weird is the lengths that they go to when they're like initially filming this episode to hide the reveal. Like mm-hmm. he writes a whole other script and like gets everyone in the read through to read this other script right. with a different ending. And it's like, as we've talked about at the start of this episode, like it is so clear that they're pointing us to River mm-hmm. being Amy's child, that it's like, why was there a whole like lost media script about mm-hmm. it like revealing the Doctor's name?
But you have to remember that back when this came out, River Song's identity was the big mystery. And it was like the big mystery. It was the fucking mystery box for since she showed up in Forest of the Dead. Like this was their big like, guys, we're finally gonna tell you who the fuck she is. Well, you've been waiting 40 years for this. I get why they did it. Even in retrospect, it's like making a big hullabaloo over the most obvious twist in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I like that they did it and they answered it in the middle of the season too. Like I feel like we in Doctor Who we really do wait until the finale for like the big thing to happen, and I do really respect them for putting it in the middle. I know obviously it was because there was a break, but still I do find it to mm-hmm. be interesting, and I feel like one of the things I love about this episode is it feels so not Doctor Who. It doesn't feel like an adventure of the week. It feels so entirely plot heavy, and I find we don't really get that, and I love that. It feels more traditional, like serialized TV.
It is amazing mm-hmm. how they add like 5 minutes to a normal episode, but it does feel like a finale, even though it is mm-hmm. episode 7.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I mean, this is the first split in the middle season.
Mm-hmm.
So
trauma for David and I. I think we decided that season six was the first season we watched live, like while being friends.
Aww. And
like,
yeah,
the trauma of them doing this, then doing it again next season, then cutting an episode from season eight onwards, then cutting more. Like it's just, it is like you say, like we hit the pinnacle of like, wow, they're doing a mid-season finale, and then it's just like less episodes bad.
Oh man!
Take me back to when a show.
No, because the mid season replacement was Miracle Day, and then it was like, because I didn't watch Torchwood, so I was like, I don't have anything for like 6 months. I have nothing to watch for 6 months.
You wouldn't want to watch Miracle Day.
Yeah, no, because I wasn't allowed to.
Wait, 6 months?
Was it six months?
Good Man came out on June 4th. Let's Kill Hitler was August 27th.
It's like 3 months, yeah. But it felt like 6 months because, you know.
No, it felt like a lifetime because were we not in school? So it was literally like, God. And then it's like, it's summer break and I have no Doctor Who. Yeah, and then that's like literally like the end of the school year. Then we have a full summer of no Doctor Who. And then the second I go back to school, it's on again. No.
Yeah. October episodes were the worst because like you just started back, you're still getting used to the whole routine, and then you have like you have to
get online and defend this show with your life.
God, the amount of episodes that group we were in were like something would come up and we'd have to like either defend it with our life or be like, just ignore this person talking right now because they're so annoying that we don't want to talk to them about this because it would become a whole thing. Like there was like one guy in particular where like whenever he posts, like there was like a lot of people like this is when this came out, like you and I had just become friends and we were making like tertiary Doctor Who friends at the same time. And like with like, you know, distance, they were insane. And like they were like, sort of, like there was one guy who insisted that he had heard the TARDIS.
Oh my god, yeah.
And there's another guy who insisted he read all, he watched all Classic Who or like read all the target novelizations in like 2 weeks or something.
Yes, and
like,
he said he owned every target novelization. And I was like, well, some of them don't have a target novelization, so what's the truth?
You called him out like in public.
That is right, you called it. You're lying, and here's the evidence.
What was the guy who heard the TARDIS also the guy who did the drawings?
He might have been. There was one guy who was really annoying and really gross about like Clara in particular, I remember.
Yeah.
What? People being gross about Clara? No.
Yeah. Yeah.
No way. Never seen that happen.
Mm-hmm. But like they were just like, they were all nutters. And it was just like, it was a moment in culture that felt so strange because nowadays, like Doctor Who fans are very annoying. I mean, like they've always been annoying, but like, you know, it's really hard. It's really hard with the like the rise of like Twitter and like the rise of like, you know, YouTube, and like, you know, you have like YouTubers who kind of are insistent on like making videos about how bad it is now and, you know, all this stuff. But back then, like we were in the trenches on Facebook.
Uh-huh.
Just like, yeah, dealing.
I think it made us closer because we were actually like trying to enjoy the episode, whereas everyone's trying to be like, it's shit, she's hot. No.
Matt Smith's a child, he shouldn't be in the role.
Yeah.
Bring back David Tennant.
Yeah, well, that didn't really go away, to be fair. It just got harder to defend.
But it was just like, I don't know.
It was definitely odd that it was like everyone was watching it, even if they didn't really care. Whereas now, like, no one watches it. Like, and very
and nobody cares. There.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like, that was around the time when like TV was changing so much as well, where like it was appointment viewing. Whereas now it's like, well, you know, I'll just
at midnight. You
know, yeah.
I'll wake up at midnight and watch Boom. I know Boom was fun to watch at midnight. Space Babies was a very strange experience at watching that at midnight because
It's turning. We turned to each other, and it was like, "Oh, who's gonna say a shit first?"
It's me. Yeah, I think it was me.
Yeah, Look at the space. It's so
sorry,
strange.
I'm
space...
sorry, that is so funny.
It's so strange that the first half of Space Babies is just all table setting for like the concept of the show, and then they just don't explain like a lot of the stuff you'd think they'd explain, like in terms of like what the show is about and stuff. Whereas like it takes great effort to explain, like, you know, we can go back and forth in time. And it's like, well, you know, I kind of expected that because you did that in the last episode as well. I don't know. Can I tell you an interesting fact?
Yes.
Keila Settle from The Greatest Showman was air fryer in The Masked Singer last season. Alexander Armstrong, Mr. Smith himself, was Chicken Caesar. Shirley Ballas, who was in The Devil's Court, of course, was Rash. She was a rat.
Oh, they kind of run out of ideas if they're just using an animal.
Air fryer is quite unique, though. I like that.
Tiffany, the singer Tiffany, was the Eiffel Tower.
Is she French?
She's American. Nikki Campbell, I don't know who that is, but he was Dippy Egg.
Dippy Egg.
Richie Sambora, of course, famously from Bon Jovi, was Jack a Potato 2 seasons
ago. There's a lot of food.
Of course.
It is a buffet.
Mm-hmm. Catherine Ryan was Pigeon. Lulu of, you know, Man with the Golden Gun fame was Piece of Cake.
It's one piece.
Amber Riley from Glee was Jellyfish. In season 4. In season three,
any Doctor Who connections? No, anyone that
yes, anyone?
Been on
yeah,
obviously, Davina is now a connection to the show.
Colin Baker. Baker is going to be in there.
Was Peter Davison not on there? Peter Davison was on it, wasn't he?
Davison was on The Masked Singer. I don't know.
I would have heard that. Sorry,
he was. I know. I'll check. Well, Lenny Henry
Peter
was on
Davison,
it.
Mass
Lenny
Singer.
Henry was on it as Blob.
Nope, he was not.
Why do they think Peter Davison was on The Masked Singer? What?
No, you're thinking of Pete Davidson.
I'm not. I never.
Are you thinking of Colin Baker being on I'm a Slave?
No, I don't know what I was thinking of. Catherine Jenkins was on The Masked Singer as Octopus.
I have found a Reddit post.
Yeah, you got the Reddit post.
So yeah, Catherine Jenkins.
Oh, of course.
As a jellyfish. Oh, yours is loading, mine's not.
Oh.
And
of course, right, Catherine Jenkins is?
She's Abigail in Christmas Carol, the one
oh,
that
I remember her.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god, I didn't know Bonnie Langford was on it.
Bonnie Langford was on it.
What?
The Bonnie.
What? That actually I do care about.
That's up there for me. Like, I do want to know what that.
I hope she won. Did she win?
I don't think so.
Damn it. If she has, she wouldn't have been doing Doctor Who. Is that what you're saying? what do they get if you win? Sorry, I'm sorry, guys. What do you get if you win The Masked Singer? I'm curious.
Shame. You get nothing.
I think you get an accolade. Oh, Bonnie Langford came second in the first season.
And who was she?
Squirrel.
A squirrel?
She did Shake It Off.
She did Shake It Off by Taylor Swift. Oh my god, I have to stand.
And she did Bang Bang, and then she did Shake It Off again.
Bang Bang. I'm going to go and buy a book. What's it called? Death in the Stars or something. Oh, I know it. I'm going to buy it. If she's a Swiftie, I'm going to buy it.
Right? First performance on her very last performance.
Have a long glitch listening to this.
I want to see that too. I need to see that performance. Which one was she in?
Season 1
of the UK.
Really? I can't find her.
And the winner was Car Wash, which I don't know how you be a car
wash.
But
who was the car wash?
I have horrible news.
What?
She was actually on The Masked Dancer, not The Masked Singer.
What?
I'm on The Masked Singer fandom.
No,
so
way.
It must incorporate both universes in this Wikipedia.
Of course. Oh my gosh. Okay,
she did dance to Shake It Off.
Okay, well, she's shaking it off. I'll still buy the book.
Just you only read half.
Does this count? Does this count as a connection, or is this like a spin-off?
This is good enough.
Yeah, it's in the same universe.
The Masked Singer and the Masked Dance. Jesse Metcalf was in it. What the hell is he doing in the UK? Why is he?
Neo was on the UK one. Gets like a little rant. Diane Warwick got voted off first in one series of the UK one. That was really strange.
I just can't believe. I really, to me, that's insane. I'm sorry, and also I can't believe the random American celebrities that show up. Like the guy from Justified is in the Robbie Williams movie as the manager, and I was like, what the hell? And he was also in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So that one was weird.
Do you know what else is weird? Ninja, what? The professional gamer, was in the US Masked Singer, and he got voted out very early on. It's more he was on it. He's on the same season as Kelly Osbourne, Patti LaBelle, and Raven Simone. Well, and Seal.
All your favorites are here.
All the stars are out tonight. Jojo Siwa was on the same season as... So Diane Warwick doubled it. She does the American one in the same season as Jojo Siwa and Jesse McCartney and Sarah Palin is in that season as well. And Drew Carey and Tony Hawk. Well, it's so fascinating because like UK reality shows and it's like celebrities... It has felt like recently, like, I don't know if it's like a mix of like the pandemic and also just money, but like the quality of celebrities kind of gone down in like these kind of things.
Yeah.
Whereas in America, you have like fucking like just the biggest stars. Although the traitors, like John Bercow, is not like a big star. He got famous for being a Tory with a very loud voice. You know, it's him being on the traitors isn't like, you know, I don't know.
I've made a revelation, sorry, just before we move on from The Masked Dancer, which is axed, unfortunately. There's only two seasons.
I feel like we already moved on past that, but you're going back.
I have to. Okay. So I was looking at...
You have to.
I was looking at like...
Please.
So like in season one, it was Car Wash versus Squirrel. As we know, Squirrel was Bonnie Langford. Right. And then there is a Doctor Who connection in season two with Adam Garcia, who is... in Christmas Invasion,
mm-hmm.
as the like what would you say?
He's the
not secretary, but
the iPad holding,
yeah,
like an aide,
the PA for. Oh my god, why is her name blanked? And you won't
Harriet Jones.
Harriet Jones.
I didn't remember.
Yes, you don't know who she is.
Oh yeah, the guy who. Oh my god!
I think
and then Ten whispers to him that she looks tired.
Yes.
But anyway, so he came second, just like our Bonnie. But so you know they're like squirrel, car, whatever. He is onomatopoeia.
What? How do you dance?
No, he's not. No, he's not. That is not a thing.
I need to see a visual.
No,
really. An onomatopoeia.
It was also the top two of season two was scissors versus onomatopoeia.
Oh,
I just saw the costume. That is
what he just like. That... It looks like the Candyman from
Oh my god!
This is boom.
The Candyman should go.
Bruno Tonioli was third as the Pearly King.
The Pearly King is one of the old gods from the pantheon of Discord.
Pearly King Masked Dancer.
Look up Pearly King on Google Images because there's like one selfie of this old guy.
Jesus, that is is that the bad guy from the series 15 episode with the animated creature coming out of the screen?
It could be, but when I look up. I love the Pearly King on
Did
Google.
Did any of that make sense for you too?
Yeah. No, I got it. Yeah.
I looked up Pearly King on Google Images, and this guy popped up, and I think this guy should be the Masked Dancer.
Now, David, you're raising there the Pearly Kings and Queens now.
Mm-hmm. I'm always erasing people. Sorry, I'm always, it's only the Pearly Kings for me, unfortunately. But
You folks want before we wrap up? Do you guys want to play a very important game of? Do you want to guess who was on the last season of Masked Singer US?
I do, but also I want to show you this photograph of a pearly king and queen that I found.
Thank you. Thank you for the representation that you're bringing to this podcast.
We're all about our pearly queens and pearly kings. Okay.
All right. So, yeah. The winner, I'll just tell you a couple of these because they're fun. The winner was Boys to Man, which is cheating. That sounds like cheating. They were the Buffaloes.
Oh, the Buffaloes. Wow. Well, they're not going to be
able to call them. Yeah. Again, I feel like that's cheating. If you're Andy Richter was in it. Drake Bell. Apparently. Oh. Wasn't he supposed to be arrested or something?
Yeah, I thought he was cancelled at least, at minimum.
Yeah.
Yeah, he pled guilty in 2021, and this was in 2024.
Trump's shit. America.
Well, yeah, they didn't care. And then we have Mario, the singer. And we have, of course, Yvette Nicole Brown, Marseille Martin. No idea who that is. Paula Cole, no idea who that is.
Paula Cole, you know who Paula Cole is?
No.
Dawson's Creek.
Natalie Imbruglia, I do know who that is. That's Torn.
The best, one of the best of all time, Torn. So.
Yeah. And then we got a couple of MLB players and NFL players. But the point I wanted to make is, isn't that cheating? Isn't the point of the game that like these are not singers?
Everyone, they always put singers on the Masked Singer. That's the whole thing. Like,
wasn't Kermit on it?
He was. Yeah.
He's a singer.
Kermit. Yeah.
Cancel Kermit for being on the Masked Singer, please. Cancel Rita Ora as well, just for being just Rita Ora at this one.
And get Jackie Tyler to meet the Pearly Kings and Queens.
It's a box set.
Rita Ora and Jackie Tyler meet the Pearly Kings and Queens.
Well, the good man went to war, and we thought it was okay. Next week, we're going to kill Hitler. Hooray!
We're not actually...
what?
I'm sorry, I had to bring
we're not,
to
you. What do you mean? We're not killing Hitler next week?
We have to do 10 weeks of torture Miracle Day, and then we can kill Hitler.
What do you mean we have to do 10 weeks of torture Miracle Day?
No! Yeah, it's broadcast order. They aired an entire season of Miracle Day. They hit the Pentagon. It was with, like, you know... I mean, you're gonna be excited because, like, Miracle Day. I don't know how you two feel about Miracle Day.
The only shitty TV show in the forest is Miracle Day.
You haven't seen it. You might like it.
I'm still sad because what the random episode 7 or whatever of Miracle Day is the only like Doctor Who universe thing that's ever aired on my birthday, and I'm being so excited, and it was like a really filler episode. Like, flashbacks.
No spoilers. Okay. I've only seen the first 2 episodes.
Paul has only seen episode 1 and 2.
Which I liked. Mm. Like, I liked the first 2 episodes. So, but then we stopped in like 2021. So I feel like maybe I will do like a watch along. Yeah, I think I'm going to do that. I can actually get caught up.
It's what I'll say about Miracle Day is that I know definitely for you, Michelle, it will tickle something out of your brain because it's like Torchwood, but it's going to be all these actors that you know that I don't know because it's always like American TV.
Hell yeah.
Like I said before, like Ernie Hudson's in there for like 2 episodes. D. Thomas Howell is in there. Mayor Winningham is in there for a while. What's her name? Frances Fisher of
Leslie. David, I'm seeing a lot of purple in this cast list in Wikipedia, which can only mean one thing. I've Googled some of these names. Teddy Sears? Wow, right before he got canceled. Didn't he get canceled?
Everyone gets canceled. The Pearly Kings.
No. I'm thinking of someone else in the Flash.
Don't cancel canceled. The Pearly Kings and Queens.
I'm against monarchy. Like, it's monarchy that covers themselves in little gold coins and with a mustache like that and a cravat like that. You know. I'm not here for that.
Francis Fisher.
That's what I'm saying.
Francis Fisher. Thomas Howell.
See Thomas Howell.
One episode.
Bill Pullman. Finn Wittrock. of American Horror Ed Story.
Is so random. Is that? Oh, he's the flight attendant.
He is. And then Constance Wu is in it for like 2 minutes as well. Like in their episodes, it's like just this random lady who's like, "Hello, Lauren Ambrose."
Hello, I don't want to be in this TV show.
That story.
Cut that. Yeah. Cut that. David. Cut that.
That story was crazy. But yeah, it's a lot of American folk. What's his name? Q. Oh, I forget the biggest one. I can't even forget the biggest one. Wayne Knight. I've can't even forgot Newman from Seinfeld and Jurassic yes. Park. He's great in that as well. He's a great little like schlubby kind of guy. But yeah, it's gonna be fun because like Miracle Day, I haven't seen in so long. I'm really excited just to delve into just the trappings of American TV, which is something we really get to look at, and like American TV as written by a Welsh guy. I think there's two. I know John Fay comes over from Children of Earth. Mm-hmm. I think there's another right there. Jaina Svensson from Buffy, and I think it's a John Shaban, not John Shaban. It's one of the B tier X Files guys, right? It's like one of your episodes. So it's
yum.
It's fun, but it's also just insane. It's mad as a box of frogs or a Pearly King. You know, again, I'm erasing the Pearly Queens. I'm sorry. But yeah, look, you know, we shined as brightly as a pearly king or queen.
We rose as we have never been higher. We will never be lower.
I was going to make a Ricky Ora joke, but I genuinely do not know a single one of your songs. So
now you're going to have to sing some Meghan Trainor to make it up.
Listen, I need you to do a snapped on Ricky Ora so I can catch up. on Meghan Trainor, I know she released a song last year, but I did not hear a single second of that. And
I'm not gonna lie, I think you ended her with your version of Mother, I Am Your Mother, and then she just never came back.
Listen to me, because like I've been on TikTok every single day for like the last like year. And I did, at no point did I hear a single second of that Meghan Trainor song, to the point where someone like did like a video where like they were like, you know, the worst songs of 2024, Meghan Trainor song. I was like, what? I don't know.
She got scared after the Doctor Who cast.
She'll be on Masked Singer next year, playing the role of I don't know.
The Pearly Queen.
I mean, if you forget it, it's so easy nowadays to not listen to a popular song. But when we were growing up, it was not easy to not listen to a popular song.
I don't know people if I call need to remember that popular music. I think I'd call it the music they play in Tesco at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
David, that was a great opportunity for you to be like, I don't know if I would call Meghan Trainor popular music, and I could have been like, what? Because she isn't popular, and you would have been like, because it isn't music.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's the same thing. Once I was shopping in Super Value, which is a shop over here, and they were playing a sound-alike version of Umbrella by Rihanna, as in, like, it wasn't even, like the song Umbrella. It was, a different song that was clearly, like, a royalty-free rip-off of Umbrella. And that, to me, is what Meghan Trainor's music is. It's just, like, it's like a royalty-free sound-alike version of another song that you can play. So maybe Ricky Ora is like the inverse of that. I mean, it's like a Tenet situation where like her music is reversing that music. I'll never know. I'll never listen to Ricky Ora, music wise or life wise, because I'll never have a situation where I have to listen to her unless there's like a bomb diffusion going on, and it's just me, Taika, Ricky Ora, the Pearly Kings and Queens,
Jackie Tyler.
Yeah. We're all trapped in this room, and she has to explain that the difference at all.
A good Jackie goes to war.
Mm-hmm.
Stitch this, mate.
And the Bionic Lady, Lady Christine D'Souza, is also there. even though that I keep going on tangents from the episode, but like the bit in that story where like she and the Christina are there, and like at no point in Once and Future, in that episode, does Lady Christie didn't like need to be there or come into like the episode at all or being involved in anything, because it's like pre, it is pre cat burglar, isn't it? It's like a young Lady Christie, you know, where like she hasn't become a cat burglar and she doesn't really do any cat burgling, and it's like, why did you guys do this beyond having to like burn up an appearance for the actress that you had like a contract.
But here's the thing, David. If at any point Russell T. Davis said Big Finish is no longer allowed to use Lady Christina D'Souza, I would do a January 6th on him, because they should be allowed to. They should be allowed to do whatever they want, because I think they're containing the world's madness into one company. I genuinely think the day Big Finish ends, the next day it'll be like the world is over. Like
I'll have nothing to talk about. Like, David, have you listened to Coda?
I have.
Like, why did they decide that? So the Fugitive Doctor is there for the first time. All the new who, all the Jodie fans are here. And then they pair her with the War Doctor, younger version of the War Doctor, not played by the War Doctor, and Bernice Summerfield. And then they bring in Elizabeth the First.
And Vienna. And a giant dragon or something. And it's like, what is going on?
Elizabeth the First is flying on a like Tudor ship through the through space. It's just like, what?
Is this different than Seventh Doctor's Regeneration story? Is this something different?
This is the 60th anniversary where they were being like the 10th Doctor and Missy, and
which is stupid,
the 4th Doctor and Osgood, all these random things. Stupid. And then they, instead of releasing the last episode, they waited a year, and then they just put a big finish and Virgin New Adventures Only Companion, a younger version of the War Doctor, and I don't even know, how would you describe Vienna, David?
Vienna, like, is a false flag operation that they put in to trick people into thinking. Like,
why
Vienna,
why did she have her own show on Big Finish?
She did, and for years, people on TARDIS Wiki were like, she's not canon. She's gonna get a page on this wiki, she's not real, she's not canon. And then they put her into Eric Roberts' Master, and they're still like, she's not real.
Is she playing Vienna in that?
She is.
Oh, I thought she was just a new character playing.
No,
by the same
she's person. Vienna. She's Vienna, and
no, like, please. Vienna and the Roberts' Master is like, I would have to have nothing to listen to listen to that.
It's just, I don't know. But like, it is interesting that those rumors came up about, like, you know, villain-focused spin-offs, and Big Finish were like, we're making a Zygon box set and a Crinoid box set, and next to have Reese Shearsmith in the Crinoid box set. And it sounded interesting. And then they were like, oh yeah, and also Michael Shannon's in the Second Doctor for like an episode. And I was like, well, what was the point? Like, what was the point? Like,
it's impressive that Big Finish actually have launched two spin-offs that sound more exciting than the actual spin-off that we're getting about the Sea Devils.
Mm-hmm. Although,
that's not a low bar to clear. If you walk up to any person on the street and go, I have a spin-off to sell you, the Sea Devils, they have lost you. You have lost them, and I have a spin-off to sell you. Like,
although, I mean, the other big thing is that, there's no other big thing. Actually, there is a big thing. I forget because they announced it. The guy from Children of Earth is back. The random general is just in this now. He's just like
a guy from, like, you know, like when they're in the boardroom and they're deciding.
The American is just in
the Sea Devils.
Oh, I can't wait to shit on the show.
And it's not Rick Yates. Somehow it's not Rick Yates, and that's really disappointing. Rick Yates should be there, being like, "Hello, I'm Rick Yates."
Not Rick Yates.
Oh, I missed Rick Yates.
You know that Rick Yates has met Jackie in a box.
You know Rick Yates has met Trump.
Rick Yates is probably...
He got assigned to the cabinet, yeah.
He was British. Like a extended universe lore outside the cabinet.
No, he's never shown up again, which is just bizarre because the guy is right there, and like he's done enough where like you think he'd be willing to like just jokingly throw himself into something as Rick Yates, but he doesn't.
If Nick Briggs likes a free roll, like,
he is our pearly king. Rick Yates mastering your arc incoming, trust me. But yeah, I don't know. Do you two have anything you wanna like plug or beyond the pearly kings and queens?
Kings and Queens is a really good song by Ava Max.
Yeah, but, like, that's all I can think of in the moment. We need to get back on our podcasting game, but we are at capacity.
What you should do is you should write to Ava Max. Because I heard if you write to people, they'll write back to you. That's what everyone always says, you know.
Yeah.
Write to her and say, listen, I got a remix idea. Purdy Kings and Queens. It's just the same song, but you know.
Exactly, because they're trying to raise money, and I think that would bring in millions, mm-hmm. if not billions.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, it brings... I got to make sure that they're not, like, you know... It's like how, you, like, the Masons exist, and, like, you're like, oh, it's really funny, and you look into it, and they're like, a really, like, ultra-Christian. I got to make sure the Purdy Kings and Queens aren't, like, you know... Makes it cancelable. Like, yeah. If you look at the Purdy Kings and Queens Wikipedia page, their photo is a ghost. Like, literally, it looks like a ghost.
Oh my god, it does. That is a ghost. That's a ghost. That's a known picture of a ghost.
Oh,
I sent the photo.
Oh, it's been scammed.
That looks like, I guess, set from the Scooby-Doo movie. Like, mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just searched Purdy Kings and Queens problematic, and I can't find anything.
Okay, thank God.
Yeah, that's our extensive research. Okay. They're like, fine.
We've been clear.
Our due diligence has been done.
Mm-hmm. One time, I was watching Jungle Book 2. It was Tarzan 2. And I wanted to, like, compliment Brad Garrett's voice performance on, like, my Letterboxd review, and I googled Brad Garrett politics just in case he was like,
that's journalism.
You can never be too careful, man. That you gotta do that. You gotta.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because today is the day that Trump announced his new ambassadors to Hollywood are John Voight, Mel Gibson, and Sylvester Stallone. So, you know, I'll leave it with that. But yeah, bye. I'm done. Bye.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And thank you for being here. And come back for Series 7. We'll save you from Miracle Day.
I haven't seen it yet, so that's why I could.
But yeah, Season 7. Bye-bye. Probably like Rio or Solander here. I don't know. Okay. I should have stayed with you last night instead of going down to find trouble. Because I'm a Londoner, and I love London so. Maybe it's because I'm a Londoner, and I think of her wherever I go. I get a funny feeling inside of me, just walking up and down. Maybe it's because I'm a Londoner, that I love London town. Get up the
traffic! Next time on Pod Tour, Who Cast?
The condemned is permitted to make a final statement.
I had a pole through my chest. I was dead, then I wasn't.
24 hours, no one's died. Not one.
Miracle day.
Miracle day.
It's like someone cast a spell over the whole world.
Did you ever hear of Torchwood? It's some kind of British intervention agency. Gwen Cooper and Captain Jack Harkness.
Down! Captain Jack Harkness, nice to meet you.
Torchwood Institute investigates the unusual, the strange, and the alien.
When are you letting me go? I said this was carried out successfully.
He's not indestructible, just undying.
What if you detach the head?
CIA!
Yeah? So what?
The amazing thing about the miracle is that it happened to everyone at the same time.
These are the times that make men stride across the skin of the world.
This is the truth.
for the whole world to see.
If you're the best England's got to offer, then God help you.
I'm Welsh.